Okay, well, welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life as a dry millennial.
Hi, I'm Kaylee, and I've been alcohol-free for 1 year.
Congrats, dude. That's amazing. You're awesome.
Thanks. It's weird. It's weird and good to be here.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I've been alcohol-free for 9 months today,
yeah.
So crazy. I've been sober as long as it takes to grow a baby.
Oh my God.
We come from really different backgrounds. Kaylee and I, and our relationship with alcohol differs individually, but we found we have so much in common with how our drinking habits made us feel and thought a lot of other people might feel the same way. So here we are, week three.
Yeah. So in our first two episodes, we covered the hot mess that got us to where we are now. And since both of us have decided to get sober during a global pandemic this summer, we've been attending events for the first time as newly sober people. So that's been a wild ride. And this topic is going to be all about navigating events when you're recently not drinking alcohol.
And I'm going to add this, like, not only just not recently drinking alcohol, but like for the last, 18 months, we haven't had practice anyways, like on top of being sober, doing things socially.
Totally. Super.
So that just adds like another layer. Oh, right. And then just like the tax that is COVID in 2020 and 2021. So, Haley, we're doing a good job. And everyone else that's giving it, you know, sobriety or is curious about sobriety, give your... And now's the time for a pat on the back, I feel like. I'm giving myself one right now.
Yes. Yeah. And I think Katie and I are pretty good about masking how uncomfortable we are on the inside. And so...
Your trauma does that to you.
Yeah, yeah. And so I don't think that anyone's not being thoughtful by not asking, but there's been very few people who have reached out and been like, how has that been for you, not drinking during this? Or is this hard for you right now? And I'll just be honest and be like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Help. It is. And I'm struggling.
Also, it's the only way I probably could have got through this last year for my own experience, my personal experience, which is interesting too. So.
Oh, totally. And we'll get into it, but I leave those situations, and even though they were hard in the moment, I'm like, I'm so freaking glad I didn't cave and drink during that, because it just would have been so much worse.
Yes. Nothing is better with a hangover, that's for sure.
I was at a work retreat too, so lots of new coworkers that I hadn't met before. A lot of them hadn't met in person, wanting to be social and hang and wanting to form those inside jokes and, you know, wanting to be a part of a crew, but also being so insecure about my body since a lot of people haven't seen me in a long time and have only really seen my face and not the full thing. And there was a pool, so I was like, great, I'm sober. All my coworkers are going to see me in my swimsuit. It was really tough, but now looking back at it, it was such an awesome time, and I'm so glad I did it the way that I did it.
You should be proud of yourself, because at any given moment, you could have just dipped and been like, nope, I'm not doing this, and you did it, and it sounds like you had fun.
Yeah, I almost didn't go in the pool. There was quite a few things that I really almost didn't do, and I definitely had people there who Katie and I were talking earlier about. You just start to realize who's your people and who aren't your people. And I had people there who really, they were the ones being like, how are you doing? Are you okay? Drove me to the little mini mart to get coping supplies that I needed. So
yes, those are the people.
Yeah. And one of those like, well, I'll go to the pool if you go. Like, should we both go? And will you meet me in the lobby so we can walk there together? And it was so cute. So I'm really thankful for the people who were there for me during that. It made it so much easier, and also just felt like this cute summer camp friendship bond. So
yeah.
I loved it. That's, I loved it. But it was hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to the Oregon Duck game with my dad last Saturday.
So yeah, college town. It doesn't matter if the game's at 11 or 7 p.m. People start drinking immediately. Like that's a
job. That is trigger. The stuff. That yeah. Is, woo. And then also like going with your dad is obviously a trigger. My dad, especially, whomst I love. He was actually kind of part of my like staying sober toolkit because he's a sober person as well. He's been sober for 10 years. And he works like a really strict AA program, like the 12 steps. And it's awesome. This is for sure like the best version of him that I've had a relationship with my whole adult life and child, like adolescent life as well. So, that was cool and also weird, like drinking NA beer with my dad and his fancy friends at the tailgater. So, yeah. So anyways, we've been putting ourselves out there, Kaylee.
Yeah. It's so funny that both of us went to Duck Games with our dads recently. And
it's a thing.
It's such a thing. And I know that my dad wished that he had a son or a son-in-law that was super into sports. And recently he was like, why didn't you ever get into golfing? And like, well, because I was like listening to screamo music and smoking cigarettes and like,
yeah,
I
am into sports and I am kind of like a son, but also I'm way too deep for my dad. Like, I love him, but he just can't with my sharing all the time. And that's a him problem, not a me problem. Love you, Dad. It's like very surface level. Let's not get into it. I mean, luckily we have sobriety in common. However, he is very skeptical about my experience with recovery and doesn't shame me, but he is, you know, AA is the only thing he's ever really been exposed to. So for him, that's the only way. But yeah, he's been gracious as he can be anyway.
Yeah, that is nice that it gives you a topic to discuss, kind of hard when not open to hearing your method of doing it or how things have really been going for you. Mm-hmm. My dad is a bro. Like, my dad is like wants to still be in college and be a bro. So he knows nothing about me at all. Like, I love him and he calls me pal and like he just wants to be my best friend. And so.
And he draws sharks on everything for you, which is adorable.
Yeah.
Your birthday cards?
Yeah. He recently really like obsessed with the movie Jaws. And I had a great childhood living with my dad. Like, it was freaking awesome. But especially when I turned 21, it was weird to be this drinking buddy and then not drink anymore and see him in the lens of just a person and a human and just kind of being like, wow, I don't think you even know that I don't – like, this isn't really my thing. And that's on me, too, for not having those conversations. But we just don't talk. We don't talk about anything except for work. And that's kind of what we have in common is he's an IT manager and I'm a project manager for some like developers and stuff. Anyway, yeah, my dad just wants to bro out and drink beers and it's great, but he is not sober at all. And so going to the Duck Games with him and having him drink and half the game, I was literally holding his second beer because he didn't want to wait in line twice. So he just got two and I held the second one and then bizarre. And then at the work retreat, there was ice cold Pinot Grigio free in front of my, like sitting right in front of me the entire night. And all my coworkers are ordering jalapeno margaritas, which those are all my favorite.
Mine too.
My favorite alcoholic drinks. And so it just felt like I like constantly, like I felt itchy the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God. Like I do try and play it off. Like, oh yeah, no, it's chill. Like I'm good. I got my, you know, I brought my weed pen, so I'm fine. But inside the whole time I was dying to drink. Like it was not easy to not drink.
Yeah.
And I thought I was over that because the first month not drinking, I felt that way. The whole first month.
Same.
And then I got over it. I was so over it, but I hadn't been really invited to anything, maybe bars, but every time I would go, I would only stay for eating a snack and drinking like two CBD sodas and then I would bail. But this was
right.
I didn't have an escape plan or mm-hmm. an ability to really get away from the situation. And I think that was really hard. And I, in that moment, even though people are definitely going to have a lot of different opinions and different needs around whether they use other substances when they're trying to be sober or booze-free or whatever. But in that moment, my weed pen was choice. Like being able yeah. to like go hide around the building and smoke a joint was, I would love to not have that be the immediate reaction, but I just needed, I needed my entire arsenal of
get being booze free.
Or like, right. yeah, I was like, as long as I don't drink, I am giving myself the allowance to do whatever I need to do. So if that means getting high, if that means going to 7-Eleven and getting like sour watermelon candy and Reese's Pieces and whatever, if that means just like staying in the hotel and taking a nap instead of doing an activity, whatever it is, like I am going to, I was just in total self-preservation mode. So
yes, as you should be, as you should be. Like, I feel like we have to be understanding with ourselves and learn from, you know, these new settings, especially since 30 years of our lives are rooted in coping with alcohol, or like, you know, maybe not 30 years, but the 10 years we were coping with alcohol in these events were only to cover up the trauma and everything we've experienced for the previous 20. You know what I mean? So like, essentially, yeah. we're like retraining ourselves. And I know for me, like with my dad, I used to drink to be around him. So yeah. this is a huge new part of not only my sober journey, which I always love saying, but also, you know, healing some of the stuff around my relationship with my dad. And so also it's just, we could talk about that for forever. And I think that from this episode, we really want to reflect on what we have in our toolkits. What do we use to get by in these situations? So I think that it's really important that we be kind to ourselves, especially as we're learning that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Katie, because I am very guilty of beating. I'm so quick to forget the things that I am doing that are really hard and awesome. Mm-hmm. And I forget about past me. And I just think that future me is not good enough. So instead of being proud, like allowing myself to be proud of those situations, I'm thinking about how my nutrition's been bullshit and how I haven't worked out in a while and all of that mm-hmm. stuff, instead of being like, you just survived the most social turmoil you have gone through in the past 2 years, and you did it sober, and that's really cool. So it's important to take a step back.
Yeah, for sure. So like, tack on to that. So my coping mechanism this week, because I've just kind of felt busy, I don't necessarily know that I have been, but you know how that happens. It's Thursday. It's Friday Junior today. And I don't know what happened for the last 4 days. But my house
I'm so sorry, but Friday Junior is the best thing I've ever.
Yeah, that's what we've been calling it at the gym. We're like, yay, Friday Junior. And I just think it's so cute and endearing. And so that's what we're going to call that from now on. I need to start like a hashtag Friday Junior. But my house, I'm looking at my kitchen right now because I'm literally recording at my kitchen table because my husband is playing video games in the office, which is my space for recording. But anyways, another episode. Love you. I'm looking at my kitchen right now, and there are shakers from pre-workout and protein shakes literally covering the counter. Mason jars of water, glasses, like dirty dishes everywhere. I still have my sweet potatoes out for dinner. And then I look in my living room, and I have 7 loads of laundry, of clean laundry that need to be folded. So that is like, that is what I do. Those are my coping mechanisms, is ignoring the fuck out of the things I know I need to be doing to do things like this, right? Like to heal myself and to like live my best life. And, you know, sometimes that means ignoring my laundry and my dishes. And tomorrow morning, I'm going to be sad because I'm going to have to, like, chug my pre-workout out of, like, an 8-ounce mason jar and, like, take a shot.
A crusty cup.
Yeah, crusty cup. So, yeah.
I feel the same way. I don't know how it gets so bad so fast, but I was really excited to do this podcast tonight. I always feel better after just letting all the feelings out.
Yeah.
And so I have a coffee cup that's in a bowl that I ate oatmeal in. So the oatmeal is just crusted all over. I have wrappings and a pile of clothes on my bed that's been transferred from my bed to my chair, back to my bed.
Oh, for, you like, preach, Kaylee, preach. Yeah. The chair.
And at this point, it's all dirty. Like, it all is covered in pet hair. It needs to be washed, but I don't know. So, yeah, allowing yourself some grace, I think, is a huge theme for when you're struggling or when you're triggered or when you, you know, feel like you want to drink or you're just, it's hard to be sober and have so many feelings all the time.
Totally.
That's a good one. And you know what? You can get to it tomorrow. You can get to it the next day. It's not right. The end of the world. You're not a bad person because you haven't folded all your laundry, you know?
No, never. And I'm not apologizing for it until someone comes over and then I'm apologizing, but not right now. So events, right? Let's do a little background on like our experience with events and like kind of where these like learned patterns and behaviors started with alcohol and like now what we're doing to retrain those patterns and those coping mechanisms.
Yes.
So I worked in the service industry forever. I mean, in high school, I worked at a bar restaurant in our hometown as an expediter in the kitchen with like, I was exposed to the worst people that a 16-year-old could be exposed to. But that's also another thing for another episode. You know, started smoking cigarettes there. Pretty regularly. Those were our breaks. You know, you're around older kids, older people, just in general. And then as I continued to, you know, get different jobs and move around, they were all pretty much rooted in dining and fine dining. And that industry is just really, like, extremely hyper-focused on alcohol. We're taking shots during work, before work, after work. When I was catering events, even, you know, it was encouraged to be drinking, you know, with some of the patrons even. And if I wasn't, it was like, oh, she thinks she's too good for us. Or, oh, why don't she want to drink, you know? And oh, and then you're not a part of the cool club even. And of course, I'll take responsibility because I was really cool and I was always a part of the cool club and I wanted to be. But yeah, it's just, you know, it was just the culture. I remember bartending an event at the Nines, which is a golf course here. It's a country club. And just old men, you know, walking up to me and saying, like, you know, I'm paying for this. You should help yourself to margaritas. You know, just, like, very persuasive behavior. And I was, like, this was from the age of 19 until I quit at the restaurant when I was 27. So, you know, the better part of the 20s.
That's a long time. And especially when you are in those situations, something weird about it being your job, wanting to do the best at your job, and sometimes that is being like the entertainment or
well, and I was flirty and fun, like I know how to have a good fucking time, you know. And so like it was you know, that just became the way of the server life, and it was pretty glorified then. I mean, I could throw back a half a fifth of Maker's Mark if I worked a double shift on you know, a Friday or Saturday. And so
if you would have told me I would get to drink for free and like that would be a perk, that would have been a perk for me. I always remember being like, I don't understand why I wasn't a bartender. I would have made so much more money in tips. I would have had like such a fun, crazy experience. No. And now I'm like, I don't know if I would have gotten out of that hole if I would have got that far into it.
Yes.
To be honest. Not that all people in the service industry, you know, it's definitely not a read on any of that, but just for me personally, I was already spending my meager paycheck on booze. If I had it for free, it would have gotten real.
Right. Well, and it's less of an attack on the people in that industry, but that is a byproduct of that like toxic space. It's like sexist and It is, you know, it's just riddled with no fucking rules.
And when people are overworked, it's hard work.
Yes, exactly. Like, it's hard work. You're on your feet. We didn't have breaks. We didn't have, you know, we didn't eat lunch. We didn't do that. It was just like when you're working a wedding for 12 hours, there's nothing else besides cocaine and shots and sneaking the overpoured beers, you know?
Because you need that quick fix. You don't have time to go in the closet and meditate for 30 minutes and like do breathing exercises.
That's a good point. Like,
You just are reaching for it because you're like, I need help now. Like, you know,
and I
want
to
be able
fun.
To snap my fingers. And
like when you're not, well, when you're not able to go out with your friends on Friday and Saturday night and get drunk with them because you're stuck at the bar or you're stuck at the restaurant, like you're just simulating that there with your work friends and with alcohol.
You have to bring the party to where you
are.
I was gonna say, especially you know, this is more aligned with smoking, but I'm sure if you talk to anyone who is in customer service, or I was in the beauty industry, so salons, things like that, you don't get to break unless you smoke and then you take a 15. But what else are you going to do with a 10-minute break? That's not even enough time. That's like barely enough time to go to the vending machine and get yourself like some bullshit snack. Like
100%. Kaylee, I know that you had your occupation, your past life was rooted in like entertainment and events. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So there definitely was an interesting part of feeling like you want to entertain sponsors who are paying a lot of money to have their booth at the event. So and also having access to free wine, which I really enjoyed drinking, or beer. But
and what was your title? Like, what was your occupation at that time?
I was like, I won't, you know, tell anyone where I worked because
it's a secret.
Because you know, I don't want any drama there.
No drama.
And definitely don't want to like incriminate myself, but I was like registration girl, so I was giving out free drink tickets to everyone. I was coordinating everything, and so some of the events would be local, but when you're doing that job, you are waking up at 6 a.m., you have a radio strapped to your head, you are in professional business clothes, and you are running around making sure the volunteers are showing up on time, making sure that event sponsors are setting up in the right place, making sure the internet's working and the printer's working and all the name badges are organized and all the computers are set up and everyone has their clipboards. And so it's just I would always get what I would call stress sick afterwards, where anytime I worked an event, because you would work like 16-hour days and then you would be done and you'd be starving and you like couldn't feel your feet. And then when you were done working and the event was over, they would have these after parties and we could all go to those after parties. So we would go to the after parties and drink the free drinks and basically like get all the perks of being an attendee at a fancy event.
But when it was more fun, like you didn't have to sit through the fucking event. So it was so much more fun afterward.
And it felt like we just got over this huge, crazy,
stressful
thing.
The celebration.
And my coworkers were fun and awesome, but I embarrassed myself so many times in front of them. I have cried. I told my event manager that I wished that she was my mom. I, you know, at a period where I was single, was making decisions that were not great or appropriate.
I was making not great or appropriate decisions while I was in a serious relationship.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? Like, that was my relationship with alcohol. Like, I was not, I was very much single in my alcohol mind, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and
I mean, I wasn't sleeping with people, but I was definitely, like, you know, seeking attention.
Totally. And it's so funny, too, when people think about, oh, that person didn't have a problem, so why did she need to, you know, quit drinking or whatever. And it's like, I haven't told you my darkest moments when I've been drunk because they're fucking embarrassing.
Like, yeah. And no one No, you don't owe that to anyone.
No, but like, I think a lot of people are living with things like that. And I just want to say that that a lot of the decisions I made were 100% not decisions I would have made if I wasn't intoxicated. And you are not how you behave when you are wasted. Like,
yeah,
you know, don't beat yourself up for that. But if you feel like that is happening to you frequently when you drink, or just enough times where you don't identify with that and you don't want to do that anymore, it doesn't make you feel good the day after. Please reach out to us, DM us, email us. I've been there. I know Katie's been there.
100%.
And there is a lot of shame around it. Like, I wish I would have like signed NDAs with my friends to be like, there was a time where I had to, this wasn't an event. This was me drinking in my backyard in the summer in like a kiddie pool, where I don't even remember what day it was. It might've been a weekday, but I literally had to go to the hospital and I thought that they were going to have to pump my stomach. And I was like, are you going to pop my stomach? Like, what? And they were like, we don't do that anymore. Like, we just give you a bunch of fluids and we hook it up. Like, what even is getting your stomach pumped? Like, they're like, that's actually like not safe practice. We're just going to give you like all these B vitamins. We're basically going to like IV you with Gatorade and you're going to go home and you're going to be fine.
Dude. You're like taking me back. I haven't really thought in a long time about how bad some of my hangovers were, like days. And
yeah,
I'd black them out. Like, I mean, it's great motivation to use to continue to stay alcohol free, but like,
yeah,
it's like, I imagine it's like pregnancy amnesia. Like, you want a kid so bad that you forget what they were like, you know, like how bad it hurt or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't actually know if that's a good analogy, but.
No, I get it.
But like, I've forgotten about a hangover, but whenever I like get that, you know, because you all get that little edge of being like, oh, I can quit drinking. I've been alcohol free for 9 months. Maybe I could drink. And then I'm like, no, no, no. Like, the way you feel the next day, the shame and the anxiety that I was experiencing. And I was always the person who did it. I never wanted anyone to tell me what I did the night before. And I...
yeah.
Got to a point in my relationship with alcohol, and it's been like this for a long time, and I don't know if it's like this for everybody, but even after one or two beers, I didn't remember patches from the night. Even if I didn't overdo it, I'm using bunny ears, overdo it, there are missing parts of just like normal ass nights, and that's how I know, like biologically, chemically, I don't know what it is, I should look that up, but I have like a reaction to alcohol that I just don't think that people like me should be drinking, period. It's awful.
I had, you know who this coworker is, but I had a coworker at the salon that I was a front desk manager for. And he would say, you're allergic. You're allergic, baby.
Yes.
You're allergic to alcohol, your face gets all puffy, and you're allergic to boys and booze. And then,
and so like, stop.
7 years later, I come out as bisexual and sober.
And oh my gosh, have they contacted you at all? Because I love that person and they would be so proud of you.
No, I think because he worked in a salon for so long, he was so used to people coming and going, but he really made a significant impact on my life. Like, I would invite him to my wedding, and I don't know if he'd actually, you know, like, I was just a kid who worked at the salon, but I worked there for like 6 years.
He loved you. You are totally downplaying your experience at the salon, because even, you know, I have a really close friend who came from the salon now, who absolutely adores you and remembers everything. You know what I mean? Like, you were the manager there. You weren't just someone coming and going.
Speaking of finding your people too, even at those jobs that were kind of shitty, I had the most amazing older women, especially like, I have wicked mommy issues. So I'm like, I want everyone to like be my mom. Like, case in point, I got drunk and told my event manager that I wish she was my mom. Like,
right.
Oh, God. So fucking embarrassing.
I love it.
I'll try not to relive that and move on to my point. But there'd be times where, because I worked there before I was 21, they came out for me for my 21st birthday and after, and I would work Saturdays. And sometimes I would get fucked up on a Friday night and I'd have to work at 9 a.m. on Saturday. And there was one point, like, pretty, especially right when I turned 21 and I didn't really know that I couldn't drink 3 drop shots at the bar and 2 glasses of wine and then, you know, anything. And yeah. I like threw up outside and they like leaned my vomit up for me and bought me a little squirt from the soda machine and like went across the street and got me a breakfast bagel. And
yes.
Like when I had boyfriends break up with me, because that was a common theme. Like, I was like in a period of like
and good riddance
again and getting dumped. And yeah. And so I got dumped like several times over that 6-year period, but they would let me come over to their house and sleep on their couch and like just really amazing people. So I'm kind of glad that I always had some folks looking out for me in those times and like telling me how it is, like, honey, baby angel, you're allergic. Like, you're allergic to alcohol. You hate it.
Right.
Don't right. Look at what it does to you. You just threw up outside, girl. Like, you know, I liked that I had the people that yeah. were like, it's okay. You're not going to get fired. Well, you know, we'll take care of you. But someone to be like,
yeah,
honey, you're too pretty and you're too smart
to do this.
Know, to do this. Like, you know, get your shit together. And everyone was like, she's 21. Let her have her fun. And he's like,
well, that's what mm-hmm. I was going to say is that I honestly, this is a great segue because I honestly don't ever remember a time in my early 20s when I was clearly going ham that I don't remember any adult in my life stopping me and saying, you know, this might not be a good relationship for you. This relationship you have with alcohol and my ex-boyfriend at the time either. No one really said that. Oh, well, minus all of my friends, but yeah. With the boyfriend. So it's interesting because I read this thing today that was like, you drink as much as you want while you're in college. And as soon as you get out, you're an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, damn, you know, and I wasn't even in college. So I didn't even fall under that category, really. I was at like community college barely when like I would make it to class, which was
it's
never.
An age range, though. It's yeah, a rite of for passage. Sure. Like,
and it's just
who
so
doesn't
embedded.
Celebrate their 21st birthday by doing something stupid or going to Vegas yeah. or, you know?
Yeah, I pissed myself on my 21st birthday. I pissed in my bed. Oh, also, and we have a friend who we love dearly. We've been friends with for 10 years. She bought me a White Russian as my first drink on my 21st birthday.
Oh, gross. Let's start the night out with yeah. some milk.
Yes, and vodka. Perfect. So anyways, it's just so embedded in our culture. And, you know, I would never point fingers at anybody, but I just, you know, I wish that there was someone who was like, stop me and be like, hey, what you're doing is destructive. Like, you're so much better than this. And not that it would have changed me, right? But maybe I would have held on to that at some point. And then to add, it's really interesting, too, that I think that people talked about it, but at my expense when I was not around. Versus,
yeah,
you know, like, I know my dad, because he got sober when I was 21. And so he, you know, for the last 10 years had made remarks like, you know, how drunk were you last night? And like as a joke. And if there was one thing that triggered me while I was like actively drinking was when someone would say things like that to me, I would get super pissed. It would hurt my feelings. I was defensive because I felt it was valid. It was valid, yeah. Right? Like they were saying that and it hurt my feelings because I was feeling that way about my own relationship with alcohol. So, you know,
truth hurts.
Yeah, dude.
Especially when it comes,
right. And especially when it comes from like your, you know, in recovery father who, you know, you're like trying to heal that relationship with, but he's a huge trigger for you. So it's just so complicated. And I know for myself, I really had to give up big events and COVID made that easier, honestly. And so,
I know
that you have too. And like, not only COVID, right. But like our anxiety and just depression and just like the shit. Right.
Yeah.
So what do you think has been the hardest part for you since getting sober and giving up these events and these social gatherings? Like, what have you taken away from that as far as the difficulty goes?
The hardest part for me has been honestly like people pleasing and legitimately having FOMO and wanting to have fun and
totally
forgetting that piece that when I'm drunk, I'm not having fun, or that I might be in the moment. You know, it's that instant gratification. You want to snap your fingers and you want to like be on everyone's level.
Yeah.
And so I had this moment where I was at the event, at my work retreat, and had this thought of looking around the table at everyone else drinking two cocktails and several glasses of wine and being like, well, if everyone else is getting to do it, like, I'm the only one who's making myself miserable right now. I could totally drink and it would be fine. And then I realized, one, it really makes you accountable when you put yourself out there. Like,
yes.
my coworkers know that I don't drink and that that's a recent thing for me. And so if they saw me, they grab a glass of wine, they'd probably like be like, oh shit, she's like going out. You know, like,
well, that's like, I'm going to interrupt you and just say to anyone listening, if you have been debating whether or not to take your sobriety or your attempt at cutting back or whatever your relationship with alcohol looks like public, if it's something you've wanted to share, then I mean, if that's speaking to you, I always recommend to do it. It really has made all the difference in this attempt at my giving up alcohol. And also, you don't have to share.
We've both talked about it, how nervous. Putting it out there was, because then you have to be held accountable.
Right. But if accountability is what you're looking for, tell one person in each space and each circle that you're in. Just starting out small. Yeah.
If you see something, say something. Mm-hmm. report. So FOMO and people pleasing and being like, I don't want to. I had someone bring me champagne for my birthday to the park, and it was so cute. And it was so weird and awkward to have them do this gesture and be like, I brought champagne. And me being like, oh my God, that's so cute. That's so thoughtful. Thank you. And then
you should drink it.
But like, I don't want it. I don't want your gift. And there was some awkwardness there for sure. Like, there was tension, man. But I was like, more for you. Like, you all keep drinking. Like,
I get it, girl.
I don't care. It doesn't mean anything, but it is that like people pleasing of, hey, Dad, I'm going to go to the duck game with you, but just so you know, I'm not drinking right now. So you don't need to buy me drinks. Yay, you save money. Like,
yeah. Oh, I can be your DD.
Yeah. For real. Except it's me and my dad don't talk about that stuff. And I need to be like, dude, let me drive.
Yeah. So I know that, and you know this because we come from the same like friend group. I have always been known as like the life of the party, right? Like,
yeah,
I know how to have a good time. I love dancing, you know, doing reckless shit. Not ever dangerous. I mean, I'm sure dangerous. Fucking dumb. But
I loved partying with you. Like, and it's interesting. We really haven't like had a sober version of the ragers we used to have. But like, you on your bachelorette party was like the best night of my life. Even though I decided to, you know, like I was, yeah. We can talk about that.
I know. We should do an episode on my bachelorette party, please. We should share the episode. Let's do an episode of my bachelorette and your 1 year sobriety birthday party. We'll share it. And then we'll share how different they were and how much, like, I want to say that I'm as much fun now, but I'm honestly just not at that point yet in my sobriety where I feel like I can dance sober or like,
yeah,
fully put myself out there. Like, I can be vulnerable and share with you and, you know, on the podcast, but honestly, especially around new people, I'm still really getting the hang of that. And so that's like been the hardest part for me. I feel like a fish out of the water. I'm not this loud, crazy, dancing, like sexual being that I once was while I was drinking alcohol. So like, just getting to know myself as a sober person has been really hard. Don't want to dance sober. I prefer intimate conversations over being the loud and outgoing person. And
yeah,
And that's been a huge learning curve, but I've honestly really enjoyed spending so much time by myself and just working on my shit. And so just trying to, for myself, like dip my toe in that like social large event water slowly. Because when I do show up, I do want to show up as my best self. And that means saying no more. And that means saying no more. I was saying yes so much before, not because I wanted to genuinely be there in that moment. It was because I wanted to drink and let go and not feel stressed and to feel carefree and to have no inhibitions. So, So I'm really like processing all of that. And I think that that's something that most people can relate to once they kick the sauce. But yeah.
Yeah. I've always struggled with feeling guilty for not enjoying things that other people we're doing. And I think going back to like not having anyone pointing at you and being like, hey, maybe you should consider this, is because everyone in my family was drinking to the point where in order to keep up with them, I would be throwing up at the end of the night.
So, oh, yeah.
So that was really interesting to experience that. But also when I was camping and everyone was drinking and raging and driving boats and doing things that were probably not a smart idea to do while intoxicated. And I wanted to sit in my hammock and read and just, you know, walk around and swim in the water. It was, you're not being social. You're not being social and you're never going to have any friends. And you need to be more like these social girls who are out there partying, you know, like your cousins and my friends' kids. And you just seem like you're stuck up and you're snotty because you don't want to hang out with everyone else. Mm. Like you think you're better than everyone else.
Well, and, you know, it all truly goes back to some, you know, our learned behaviors when we were a kid, because I, on the opposite end, was always performing as a kid for everyone around me, people pleasing, because it was how I got attention. And it's so funny because I like think about, you know, myself at a dance recital as a child. And then I see myself as a strong girl on like a dance floor at like a fucking club that we won't talk about here in Eugene. And I'm just like, wow. You know what I mean? It's like very similar and sad.
It's so crazy when you make those connections. Like I have not, probably because I haven't been sober. I've now been sober long enough to give myself time to think about this stuff. And I think when you don't drink, you really do the work, whether you like it or not, and start to make those connections of, oh, shit. But it has been almost another tool to be like, I don't have to. This was who I was before and what helped protect me when I was a kid. But I'm fucking 31 years old and I'm an adult and I can do whatever I want now. So if I don't want to go be around a bunch of sweaty people dancing while I'm sober, like maybe some people will think that I'm lame, but I'm so excited to play Animal Crossing in my bed and eat cookies and
go to sleep. Yes, you're talking my love language right now. Well, and then just, you know, like it's hard to do, but sometimes it's important that we do it. It's important that we reflect, you know. Do we miss listening to girls cry in the bathroom? Do we miss losing our phones? Do we miss those things? Those things like not being that and not experiencing that and, you know, going through that deep-rooted shame the next day fuels my sobriety for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There is like, this could definitely be another episode, but that interesting part of like when you are that young feeling like this young hot thing about town and you feel like you're a sexy hot young thing and out drinking cocktails and getting male attention or, you know, just stuff like that. And sometimes what's hard about thinking I'm boring or thinking I'm lame or being like, I'm 30 and I just lay in bed all day and play video games and that's so lame, but I also like myself so much more than I ever have when I just allow myself to do what I want to do. And you can be all of those things and still be sober and at any age. Like 100%. There are tons of examples of that when you, I don't know, just get to know people or realize people were, you know, sober when you didn't think they were. So
yeah, no, 100%. I think that like how we prepare ourselves for those events and like when we're going to be around the, you know, whether it's drunk groups of people or just groups of people in general. Like I I really do have to like prep and self-care.
Yeah.
I'm like my number one thing before, you know, going to that duck game was getting a good night's sleep before. Number one. Number two, like setting expectations in the sense of like journaling about how I'm going to start my day, what I'm going to do. I'm going to work out. I'm going to call a sober friend, which is usually you, Kaylee. I like kind of form an exit plan, even with my husband, so, you know, since he didn't go with me, reminding myself, why am I not indulging anymore in this, you know, what seems like form of freedom, which is not, it does the opposite for me. I picked up Athletic Brewing. Shout out to Athletic Brewing. I picked up some of their hazy IPAs before I went. We have so many options in Eugene, which has been a lifesaver. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to see you in Portland this weekend because I want to pick up some like spirits, some NA spirits. Anyway, so just, you know, preparing my friends, saying, hey, Kaylee, like, I'm going to call you in vent probably after, and I'm sorry, but I love you. And yeah, what about you? What do you feel like your go-to is or what you do to prepare now?
Yeah, I feel really similarly in that if you're going to text me right now and be like, hey, there's a thing, come. Absolutely not. 100% no. Fuck no. Like, so for my work retreat, I started packing 2 days before, which I usually don't do. I usually pack like day of, and made a list of things. And then a coworker who actually doesn't drink as well reached out to me because I asked for help. I was like, hey, I know this is going to be hard. I know events are a trigger for me. Like, I love to party and get down at stuff like this usually. So what if there's anyone who can slide into my DMs who has tips for me, like, please let me know. So I think just being a little bit vulnerable and asking people and putting it out there as well to like hold you accountable. Like, I'm doing this thing. I don't want to drink at this thing. Help me not drink at this thing. And yeah, so my coworker who also doesn't drink hit me up, and we went to this Asian market and got a bunch of really fun drinks. So like boba tea in a can and the little glass drinks that you push the ball down and it carbonates.
Oh my gosh, I love those. Yeah. Fun stuff.
So I bought like $20 worth of drinks, CBD, ginger beer from Rogue, all that stuff. And I got 6 drinks for $20, which was great. And like I said, I am still smoking the devil's lettuce. So I got some joints to like smoke on the beach and just was like, this is going to be, I brought my Nintendo Switch if I wanted to hang out in the hotel or couldn't sleep one night instead of going down and drinking with everyone else. I could play Switch and hang out in the robe in the hotel. So
yes. Oh, those fancy robes.
Yeah. Find what you're excited about and just do it. Do it your way, you know?
Do it your way. My way or the highway.
Yeah. So that's what I did. I prepped. NA beverages were helful. All that stuff.
Yes. Yes. So now that you've been sober for a year, you're the veteran. I'm obsessed with you. what has surprised you about sobriety and socializing?
Yeah, I think this is a really good way to tie the knot on this episode because I have talked a lot. We've both talked a lot about how hard it's been and how challenging it is and how you kind of have to have this survival kit to be able to get through it. But honestly, just finding that I love not having plans, and I used to feel really guilty about that. I used to think that what made me a social cool person was having all of these different activities. And I've realized now that even without the hangover, I do feel a little bit of social burnout. And the joy of waking up on a Saturday, not hungover at 9 a.m. and feeling like I have my whole day ahead of me is so fucking cool. And I used to wake up Saturday hungover, throw up, go maybe get brunch or maybe like Postmates some fast food and sleep and be on the couch and just watching TV all day. And now I feel like I don't know. I just feel like I can have a whole Saturday where I go thrifting and go get coffee and call my friends and get my grocery shopping done and clean the house. And it's all, not that you even have to do all of those things, but it makes me feel really accomplished and feel good when I get like,
or that like,
you know, I get,
you could, right? Like that you could do them. You can make the choice. You can get off the couch. Like you have the mental capacity to complete those things on your checklist if you want to. You don't have to. But you're not dying of a hangover, right? Like, or beating yourself up or like diminishing your self-worth because of your actions and the choices you made while you were under the influence the night before. Like, that's a huge part of my anxiety and experience in sober Sundays, as I like to call them, sober Saturdays, whatever. I'm a pretty early riser. Like, pretty much I'm up at like 8 a.m. Saturday, Sunday. And
yeah,
I love it. I love just like basking in the sunlight in my bedroom and, you know, just getting up and moving at the pace that I want to move. And I always say I'm on my OFP on the weekends, just my own fucking plan. Steve loves it because it's just like I don't make plans for anyone else on like at least one of the 2 days. I'm just doing my own thing. So leaning into that and dating yourself, as we like to say, it's just so important for getting to know yourself, I feel like.
Yeah. And also, I thought that I would be so miserable and bored all the time. But I found this like childlike wonder, which sounds so cheesy, but in just the smallest things that I enjoy so much more. Like before on Saturday mornings, I would just like, I don't know, like chug coffee and then almost shit my pants and just feel so sick. And on a Saturday morning, getting to call a friend that I haven't talked to in a while and sit out on my balcony on my stupid lazy boy and my dog's on my lap and I'm sipping coffee and it's like a crisp, you know, Saturday morning, that is so tight. Like I I love it. And that just sounds like something that before would have been something I wouldn't have even done or would have been just something I didn't even think about because I was just waiting until the next event or party or thing that I was going to do where I could
filling my time, filling my time. So I couldn't reflect, you know? Oh, I'm so glad that we're not doing that anymore.
go for it.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that like huge takeaway. Bailing makes you cool and fucking mysterious, and do it. If like you or like if anyone listening is, you know, reevaluating their relationship with alcohol, cutting back, quitting, sober, whatever, fucking remember that you should say no if it does not feel good.
Yeah. And there's a way to do that too, as someone who's a people pleaser. I know the crushing feeling of feeling like you've let someone down or you hate canceling last minute and you think everyone's going to talk shit about you for bailing. There's totally ways to do that. I've been working on ways to do that of not saying yes right away and saying, you know, I don't know how I'm going to feel that day. Can I get back to you? And then, hey, that's actually not going to work out, but scheduling something that I can have control over where it's not an alcohol related event. Yeah, bail on alcohol, bail on people, respectfully, but you do more of what you want to do, and it will take a while to figure out that what you want to do might not necessarily be drinking all the time. But if you are starting to lean that way, that's awesome. I hope that's why you're listening to the podcast, for more tips and tricks about that, or just to hear other people who are kind of going through the same thing, and we're totally here for it. So let us know if there's anything that you've experienced that you want us to cover or give advice on. Obviously, we are not a part of any sort of program or experts in this at all.
Yeah, this is not a replacement for therapy. Get a therapist. If you can't, email us. Let's talk about it, because it's hard out here. And we just want, you know, to be able to offer any kind of support that we can. I always like to wrap up our episode, or we're trying to like figure out a good outro, right? Like, how are we gonna tie these up with a nice little, you know, bow and say goodbye? But we've pulled away a quote that really resonated this week with us. People pleasing isn't about keeping others happy. It's about your ego wanting to keep you safe. We pulled that off of To Be Magnetic. If you don't follow them on Instagram, please do. They're amazing. But essentially, we're not people pleasing to keep people happy. We're doing it because we don't know how to value ourselves to the highest level to be able to say no because it's what's best for us without protecting everyone else, because you want to be loved, essentially, right? Like, you want to be safe. You want to be loved. You don't want to be rejected. And if you fucking date yourself, man, no one can reject you.
Yeah. I'll add on a quote from RuPaul, of course.
Oh,
very fitting.
Katie,
very fitting for me.
My favorite.
She says at the end of every episode, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love someone else? And I think that's what we should all be striving for. Like, treat yourself how you would people please yourself.
Yes. Oh. Okay, write that down.
Thank you for the Instagrams.
And then we'll just kind of leave you guys off with some reminders about Reframe App. If you are interested in changing your relationship with alcohol, if you're sober, if you're sober curious, if you're cutting back, you want to, like, you know, go down to 1 to 2 drinks a night instead of a bottle and a half of wine. We've fucking been there. If you're looking for a tool and you have the means to afford it, Reframe App is $15 a month. It's a tool using neuroscience psychology to understand the way that alcohol plays in our lives. And it's been imperative in my recovery. There's daily tasks. There's an arcade for triggers. There's daily motivational quotes, just in case you're into that. I am. And a really great forum where not only moderators on the forum, but also other people using the app are talking to each other, sharing their stories, and, you know, giving people advice if they're asking for it. So if you're interested in that at all, use my code Katie. It will provide you with 15% off your first in-app purchase. And yeah, we're excited to talk with you guys next week. What do you think, Kaylee?
And Katie's code, everyone, Katie's not basic, okay? Her name is spelled K-A-T-Y.
You're so good at remembering that. I should spell it, not say it. K-A-T-Y. Yes. But no, seriously, do try the free trial of Reframe, everyone, because it's legit.
Awesome. Well, that's our episode. We're, you know, a little bit all over in terms of events and how we deal with them. It's definitely a topic that I feel like we could spend multiple episodes on, but we really hoped you liked it, and more episodes will be coming weekly, and we'll cover a range of topics centered around trying to be the best versions of ourselves without alcohol. If you liked today's episode, be sure to subscribe, and you can follow us on @dryhardpod on Instagram.
All right, Kaylee, we're going to sign off with a happy 1 year sobriety birthday.
Thank you. Happy little baby not drunk birthday to me.